Hey everybody, Corey Guns with you. Welcome to the Dog Days of July, and welcome to this week's Kentucky Wrestle Report. On today's episode, I'll be joined by insider Austin Kellerman, who contributes to ProWrestlingSheet.com, which is one of the top wrestling news and rumors websites going today. Austin and I will talk about the indie wrestling scene renaissance we're seeing lately, SummerSlam and Hell in the Cell rumors, Brock Lesnar's current run, and he gives me some inside views on the new TV deal for SmackDown. Plus, as always, I'll get you updated on the independent wrestling shows going on around Kentucky and the surrounding area. Before we get started, I do want to take a second to thank all you guys who are tuning into the show and listening. As I mentioned in the intro, this is the first day of July, so we've officially have been broadcasting for about a month now, and every new episode that I upload is getting more and more listeners each episode. Topping out with our show last week featuring Shane and the Dude, which was our most listened to episode to date. And as I said, every episode that we've uploaded has gotten more and more listeners. So I thank you guys for tuning in. Continue to do so. Share it with your friends. Give us shout outs on Twitter. Let people know that we're around and what we do here on Kentucky Wrestle Report. And hopefully those numbers will continue to go up. And also, I'm hoping that here in the very near future, maybe even by next week, I'll have a real exciting announcement to make about Kentucky Wrestle Report and about where we may be taking our podcast to next. So stay tuned for that. But again, just want to thank everybody for tuning in. Hopefully those numbers continue to go up each and every episode, each and every month. And I appreciate those of you that have tuned in and stuck with us thus far. So before we go around ringside with Austin Kellerman, I want to bring you guys into the event center and tell you about a couple of big shows coming up here featuring two big Kentucky independent promotions, the World Wrestling Alliance and Primetime Wrestling. First, for the WWA, on July 7th, which if you're listening to this on Friday, that's tomorrow night, Saturday night, at Livermore City Hall. It's Final Countdown for the WWA. And then the following Saturday, July 14th, in Central City at the Central City National Guard Armory, it's Independence Day 2018, presented by the WWA. On July 14th, that event is going to be main evented by a last man standing match between new WWA champion Dakota France defending the title against former champion Stonewall. And if you listened to our episode a couple weeks ago with Dakota France, he told everybody that he was going to take Stonewall down, and at that big event in Evansville, Indiana, that featured Jeff Jarrett and also Road Warrior Animal, Dakota did just that. He defeated Stonewall and became the new WWA champion, and now he'll defend his newly won title against Stonewall in a rematch, but this time it's going to be a last man standing match, so make sure you guys get out and check that out. Also, if you're in the Paris, Kentucky area, Primetime Wrestling has two big events coming up the next two Sundays at the PTW Sportatorium there in Paris. Now, PTW has wrestling every Sunday night at 6:30 there at the Sportatorium, but the next two Sundays are big because, as I told you in last week's episode, they're gearing up for their DVD taping on July 15th, which will feature Impact star Abyss, who will be coming and doing a shot for PTW. It will also feature the PTW Elite Tournament, and if you haven't been paying attention lately, PTW's been running qualifying matches for this Elite Tournament for the past couple weeks on their Sunday night shows, and it's featured some of the biggest names in the area in the independent scene. Guys like Real Deal Derek Neal, Hot Fire Myron Reed, Tyler Matrix, of course the PTW Elite Champion Austin Tyler Morris, Picture Perfect Jordan Cage. Some of the best wrestlers in the area today have been a part of that tournament. And that tournament will be taking place and concluding in the same night on July 15th, as well as featuring the Monster Abyss from Impact coming in, as he'll be challenging PTW heavyweight champion Reverend Ronnie Roberts. So again, Paris, Kentucky, every Sunday night, Primetime Wrestling at the PTW Sportatorium at 6:30, and definitely make sure that you're there July 15th for the big DVD taping.
Ah!
right, and joining me around ringside today on the Kentucky Wrestle Report, he's an award-winning TV news journalist, and he's also a contributor to ProWrestlingSheet.com, which you can go to find all of your news and rumors around the wrestling world. They have over 32,000 followers on Twitter. He is Austin Kellerman, and he joins me on KWR tonight. Austin, how you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you joining us. Let's get right into it. I've got a lot of things I kind of want to touch on with you. And first off, let's start, as I mentioned, you know, being a guy that has a lot of experience in television and in that realm, I wanted to pick your brain a little bit about the new TV deals that Raw and SmackDown have had constructed. We know that Raw is going to be staying on USA Network while SmackDown is going to be moving over to Fox. Now, we've known that for a while, but this past week we got an official press release from Fox about SmackDown moving over in October of 2019. And there were a couple things that I thought were interesting, most of which is that SmackDown is not going to be broadcast on the Fox network. It's going to be over on Fox Sports. So that was a little bit of a surprise to me. It seems like they're still going to keep that Friday night slot. They're still going to keep it live. There's been rumors that they may even do some like in-studio type shows, kind of a la ESPN, related to and focused on WWE contact. We've heard rumors that NXT may be even moving over to Fox Sports at some point during that deal. So with your background and expertise in television, what are kind of your thoughts on these new deals, and where do you kind of see them going in the future, even beyond the SmackDown move in the fall of 2019?
Sure. Yeah, so actually it's interesting because I work at a Fox and NBC duopoly. So, you know, we're kind of represented in both of these television deals. Now, the word that we got on the Fox deal is that, you know, SmackDown will air on the Fox network on Fridays from 7 to 9, not on Fox Sports. So that would mean that SmackDown will be on the broadcast station, and for us it will be a news lead-in, which – you know, it sounds kind of crazy to think of SmackDown Live being the lead-in for a local newscast, but that's going to be the case. And to be frank, it's probably going to be the highest-rated television show, you know, maybe outside of Empire, that's on Fox broadcast. So to think that we're at that point now where, you know, pro wrestling, which years ago was kind of shunned in society and shunned in pop culture, is now going to be the lead-in for local news, you know, from 7 to 9, you know, in that prime time slot, it's just crazy. And yeah, a lot of what you touched on there, I mean, the opportunities with Fox Sports, you know, to be able to do NXT or to be able to do a studio style show, not unlike, you know, SportsCenter or, you know, Talking Smack, which you know, was obviously had some success on the WWE network. There's so many opportunities like that now that they have, you know, utilizing both networks and all the sub-channels that they have, you know, to really do some neat stuff. I saw a few rumors floating around this week about, you know, could they bring back Saturday night's main event on either NBC or Fox, and really they could. If you think about, you know, UFC often took the Saturday time slot from 7 to 9, and Fox will occasionally put boxing there, but I imagine they'll be looking to fill that, you know, with something too, and WWE programming would just make sense. So I think there's a lot that, you know, is still to come from this. There's a lot of opportunity, and it's exciting to see where it goes.
Was there, that you know of, was there any initial conversation of having SmackDown on Fox Sports or on FS1, or was it always going to be broadcast on the Fox, the main cable network, or the broadcast network? Because it seems to be there's a little bit of maybe some conflicting information.
Right. I think there was kind of a back and forth, at least with wrestling fans, but I sat in on the conference call that Michelle Wilson and George Berrios with WWE had. And they talked about, you know, it will be on the broadcast network. And, you know, we had, I think it was the Hollywood Reporter actually put something out that said Rupert Murdoch was in the meeting, you know, pitching the deal to Stephanie McMahon, Triple H, and the WWE team. So to see, you know, Fox's chairman come front and center and pitch the company the way he did, you know, that's quite a commitment from Fox Television. And, you know, I mean, there's going to be competition between Fox and NBC. Fox is going to want to one-up NBC, you know, and NBC is going to feel that pressure. So I think that's going to create a lot of opportunity too with those broadcast networks, and big television companies, trying to do something different, something creative with WWE's product.
You mentioned kind of the funny take that, wrestling, will now be a lead into the nightly news. And back in the 80s, it seemed like the WWF at the time were almost having to beg sponsors to come on and get on board with them. And then we got into, the Attitude Era, which really was a boom period, but, some of the content there was still kind of scaring off some sponsors. I don't think you ever would have seen, Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock and those type of content leading into your nightly news. But now right. We see that that's kind of, maybe a reality on the Fox deal. What do you attribute kind of that shift? And is it just simply the focus more, the quote-unquote PG area, the focusing back on the kids and away from more of the adult content? Is it more of just a national acceptance of wrestling as entertainment instead of just, the wrestling business?
Right.
So, what do you attribute that to where now we're actually seeing, not only is Fox willing to pay out big bucks to get SmackDown, which some people would see as the B show, so they're not even getting the quote-unquote A show from the company, but also using that as a lead-in into something like, the nightly news.
Right, yeah. I think it's really the PG era certainly plays a factor in that, but I think it's just WWE's efforts to expand the brand over the years. Making Stephanie McMahon the brand ambassador and having her go out and, be part of the Special Olympics that we saw the other day and, be represented with the Komen group and other charities like that. Just their efforts to make it more socially acceptable. Total Divas, Total Bellas, that sort of programming that infiltrates kind of that pop culture norm, if you will. All those things kind of attribute to making it more normal or regular programming. I would say, too, the fact that, we live in this DVR world and there's a need for live programming. That's why there'll always be a place for the NFL or there'll always be a place for the NBA. And as long as WWE is putting on an exciting live product, there's always going to be a spot for them as well, because in some ways it's DVR proof. So I think when you look at all those sorts of things, and their efforts too to get, their wrestlers on talk shows, to get them, into television and into movies. You look at, The Rock's success, certainly helps the WWE. John Cena's success helps the WWE. It's really interesting to see where we've gone, and it'll be, extremely interesting to see where we go 5-10 years from now. Can wrestling fans walk around and talk about being wrestling fans without being judged? I don't know. I don't know if we'll get to that point. But we're certainly, much farther along than we were, 10 or 20 years ago.
Last thought on this, and then we'll move on to a different topic.
Sure.
I mentioned that SmackDown is really, I think, since its inception, been looked at as the B show. Now, there's times that fans have argued that the content or the wrestling on SmackDown was better than Raw, and that's kind of a debate that wrestling fans can have. But pretty much within the company, I think no one could deny that it's seen as the B show. Raw has always been the A show. Vince McMahon, that's his baby. It's always going to be seen as the top show, and it's 3 hours, et cetera. With the move to Fox, this is broadcast television. This isn't cable. So even though Raw is, live for 3 hours and it's seen as the A show, SmackDown's moving over, to a channel like Fox. Could we see a shift where SmackDown maybe not as looked at as the A show, but because of the fact that it's on broadcast television, that maybe it will get a little bit more attention paid to it? Maybe we could see another, shakeup where we're getting some more of the top stars, maybe a Roman Reigns, maybe a Braun Strowman, comes over. And I know that we're looking at this, more than a year down the road, so it's kind of hard to telegraph it out that far. But could this deal make SmackDown more on par in the eyes of not only the fans, but also the company itself as real, maybe not competition to Raw, but just kind of a 1A and, 2A type show as opposed to, a very distinct, it would seem right now, A show is Raw, B show is SmackDown.
Right. I think you have to, because if you think of the USA Network, you know, you're not getting any new viewers on USA. The same people who've watched USA for the last 10 to 20 years, no wrestling is there. If they sample wrestling, they see it. They've already made their decision on whether or not to watch. When you talk about Fox, you know, you do have an opportunity to capture some new eyeballs who, you know, watches Fox as part of their normal routine, or when you flip the channels, you know, it's kind of at the beginning of that flip process. Rather than the end, which some cable stations are. So you have such an opportunity there to grasp new audiences, to get some new eyeballs, which they're always looking to do. And you're going to have a lot of pressure. You know that Raw rating is probably going to be what it is. It can go up and down. It can fluctuate. But it's going to be a solid number, and USA and NBC are going to be happy with that. You know, with Fox, they're going to expect a bang. They're going to want a bang, and WWE is going to want to deliver on that, you know, from a rating standpoint and for its stockholders as well. So you got that built-in pressure right off the bat, and so they're going to have to make some smart, strategic decisions. You know, maybe it's not, you know, as you mentioned, the A show, but it's the A-minus show, and it has a John Cena, or it has, as you mentioned, a Roman Reigns. You know, you're going to have to put some name value in there on that product, and I think they will. It would be silly for them not to. And as you mentioned, they have a long time to prepare for that.
All right. So switching gears a little bit to from, you know, the top company to maybe some of the smaller guys trying to make some noise. You know, obviously Kentucky Wrestle Report, we focus on, you know, the independent scene here in our state of Kentucky, but really the independent scene overall has seen a little bit of a rebirth, a little bit of a revival here lately. When you look at companies like, you know, ROH, Impact Wrestling, if you want to consider them an independent, New Japan Pro Wrestling, I know they're not really an independent, they are a national company, they're just based in Japan and not in the States. But in the States, I think a lot of fans are probably not familiar with them, or maybe see them as, you know, an independent
right.
promotion. You know, you've got the All In event that's coming up, that's done huge business, sold out, you know, 10,000 seats in, you know, 10, 15 minutes, whatever it was. And you've got guys like Kenny Omega, like Cody Rhodes, like the Young Bucks, that are legitimate stars and have the opportunity to work various companies or territories, if you want to use that term, like they did kind of back in the old days, where they're not just stuck in the WWE. They can go to ROH. Cody can win the ROH title and be on, you know, in New Japan and do some things, you know, around the country. So do you think that we're seeing a real rebirth of the independent scene, and where they could actually put some pressure on WWE eventually and kind of create some competition? We heard, you know, way back when WWE bought WCW, you know, we've heard a lot of people do interviews about the biggest thing drawback to that was there was nowhere for anybody else to work. You were either in WWE and that was it. There was no WCW, there's no ECW. Now you've got companies like New Japan, ROH that are putting on shows, that are traveling around the country. Is this a real rebirth of the indie scene, or is this just kind of a mirage of it's hot now, Kenny Omega's hot now, Cody's hot now, yeah, they sold out 10,000 seats, but the WWE does that every weekend, you know, four nights out
right.
of the week. So is this a real thing, or is this just kind of are we kind of prisoners of the moment, and really, if you know, if you're not in the WWE, eventually it's going to fizzle out and there's not really any room for anyone other than the WWE to make any noise in the business?
Right. How about a yes and no to that? And a no from a standpoint of, I don't think WWE will have viable competition, true competition ever again. I just don't. I think the brand is so established that unless you have, you know, one of these networks, unless Disney and ABC decide they're going to launch wrestling and, you know, kind of do what Ted Turner and Eric Bischoff did, you know, so many years ago, unless you have a machine behind it like that, I don't think there'll be true competition. Now, do you have an independent scene where wrestlers can make a living, you know, and you know, it's amazing when you see the Young Bucks, you know, who have, you know, they're making all this money off T-shirt sales and merchandise sales, and you can walk into Hot Topic and they have T-shirts and, you know, dolls and action figures and stuff like that in there. You know, from that standpoint, to be able to have that sort of wrestling economy, if you will, for those workers, it, to me, is amazing. It's neat to see us to that point. And I think largely, you know, it's because of WWE and the success of, you know, wrestling as a whole. And you have fans who want alternatives, and those guys can provide that. New Japan can do that. ROH can do that. So, you know, is the independent scene in a great place? Yes. Right now, I would say yes. You know, but if you talk about, you know, are there a lot of promoters and companies that are, you know, are able to do this full time and make money off it? I still don't think you're in that spot yet, but you are in a place where some wrestlers, you know, and probably a small percentage, but, you know, some wrestlers can make a good, viable living off it, being full time wrestlers, and that's healthy for everybody. The big question is, does WWE eat up that talent? You know, as they've done in the past, and just seeing the relationship that you saw with them, I almost felt like WWE was courting the Young Bucks and courting Kenny Omega when they did the video game showdown with New Day, just in the way they promoted them on social media. It'll just kind of be interesting to see where that goes, and if they gobble these guys up, or if they, you know, let them do their thing and maybe establish some sort of a working relationship with those talents or the companies that they work for.
It's interesting that you said, because that was exactly what I was going to ask you next, was do you believe these guys like the Young Bucks, like Kenny Omega, that have gone on record saying that they don't want to work for the WWE, that they'd rather keep doing what they're doing and stay, you know, have the freedom to work different, you know, promotions and do their merch sales and things. Do you really believe that they truly don't want to work for the WWE, or is this just politicking? When the time's right, I can get a bigger contract. You know, to me, it's hard to believe that guys don't want to work for the WWE. Now, they may be able to make more money doing what they're doing if the WWE is like, hey, our roster is bloated as it is, so we're not really in a position that we need to offer you huge money. And so that's one thing. But for them to say that they don't want to work for the WWE, I'd have to think that, you know, if they're, you know, they'd have to be thinking, if we're making X now, imagine what we can make if we're on the stage that the WWE provides. So do you believe these guys that they really don't want to work for the WWE?
I absolutely do not believe them. No, that is something that you say. That is something that you say when you work elsewhere. And then the stories come out, you know, once they do sign of, oh, this was my dream and I always wanted to do this and I've thought about this since I was a little kid. I mean, you've almost seen that in some ways with Samoa Joe and AJ Styles, these guys who forever were like, no, I'm happy with Impact or I'm happy doing my thing. And then when they sign, suddenly they're the biggest champion ever for the company. You know, they're tooting the WWE horn. And, you know, I think it's just one of those things you do. Like you said, it's kind of politicking. You know, but don't think for a second that there's people at WWE saying, well, these guys just said they don't want to work here. We aren't going to call them. You know, they don't have interest. Everybody knows the way the game is played, and I would be shocked if one day we don't see Kenny Omega or the Young Bucks in WWE, and we'll probably see interviews with them where they say, dream fulfilled, I'm happy to be here.
Do you see a scenario where someone like a Kenny Omega or like a Cody Rhodes could work a deal where they work for the WWE, but the WWE also allows them to do ROH and New Japan shows, kind of like what they're doing now, where WWE just becomes another one of their quote-unquote territories that they work? Could that be a shift that we see that, you know, maybe if the indie scene doesn't actually provide competition, like you said, because a lot of wrestlers are still making such a good living without working for the WWE, could that maybe be something new that we see that, okay, we want you to come in, we recognize you're a star, you can bring eyeballs to our product, but if you also want to go and work other shows and continue to, you know, have your shirts sold at Hot Topic or, you know, do some New Japan stuff, you know, go over there for a couple weeks a year, we'll allow you to do that. Could that be something that might change the WWE's business model?
Well, that's a great question, and we're seeing it play out right now. Of course, we're seeing it with two future Hall of Famers, with Rey Mysterio and Chris Jericho. And these are guys, I think in the last month, Rey Mysterio has worked for AAA, he's worked for New Japan, and he's, you know, been announced as the you know, special character in the next 2K game. So, I mean, this is a guy who somehow, some way is floating between, you know, maybe the three biggest companies, you know, outside of Impact. And you kind of sit here going, well, that's not the way it's supposed to work. What's going on right now? And maybe that is a shift in some ways. You know, we've seen these working relationships with, you know, the WWE and Evolve and, you know, some of the UK, some of the companies over in the UK. Triple H has said he's open to more working relationships with the company. Does that mean that they could do something like that with a Cody Rhodes or a Young Bucks or a Kenny Omega? I don't know. But I think, you know, we continue to kind of see what do they do with Jericho? Is he still allowed to work for WWE here and there and New Japan? You know, where does Mysterio end up? Does he become full-time on the WWE roster? Or does he get to float in between? I think what happens with those two will set the tone for everybody else.
Yeah, it'd be really interesting to see those guys kind of float, you know, back and forth, maybe even get, you know, to see a New Japan title show up on WWE programming, or, you know, or vice versa. Maybe New Japan brings in a WWE star for, you know, a tour or something. So, you know, maybe that's how they get those guys brought in, but I guess that remains to be seen. Now we'll turn, as I mentioned, you know, you're a contributor for the ProWrestlingSheet.com, and you had what I thought was an interesting report come out just earlier this week, that there were kind of some initial early advertisements for Hell in a Cell that were running in local markets. Right. And they were advertising two big main events, AJ Styles against Samoa Joe and Roman Reigns against Kevin Owens. And what I found interesting, you know, the AJ Styles, Samoa Joe, I think a lot of people have kind of felt like that was kind of the direction that we're going in. The Rusev match at Extreme Rules, probably more just a stopgap heading into SummerSlam. But the Roman Reigns, Kevin Owens match kind of caught my attention. Now, I know obviously card is subject to change and obviously it's very early, but seeing that advertisement kind of struck me. We've got SummerSlam coming up, you know, before that in August, big event. And so that ad told me that at SummerSlam, we may see one of three things happen. Either A, Roman Reigns beats Brock Lesnar for the Universal title and is the champion, you know, going into Hell in a Cell facing Kevin Owens. B, Braun Strowman takes the title from Lesnar but is in another feud at that time, because obviously we see Owens and Strowman are feuding now, but maybe by the time Hell in a Cell rolls around, that's no longer the case. Or Brock Lesnar is still the Universal Champion and Hell in a Cell is just another event that he is not working. Whether he does or does not show up to SummerSlam, which obviously we've had reports that he's not coming to SummerSlam. I tend to think that's a storyline and that he will be at SummerSlam defending the title. But the third option would be Brock Lesnar is still our Universal Champion, retains or doesn't show up to SummerSlam, and is also not working Hell in a Cell. So from your viewpoint, and I know these are just early advertisements, but did you get any sense of what direction the WWE may be going in with if these advertisements are actually the matches we're going to see? And I know that in your advertisement that you tweeted, it didn't list AJ Styles or Roman Reigns or Owens as the WWE or Universal Champions. It simply just listed the matchups, you know, Styles versus Joe and Reigns versus Owens. So do you think that these are, you know, is kind of where we're going, or is this just too early to tell?
Yeah, I think it's probably too early to tell. Now, one little update from that. During Raw in South Texas, they ran some television ads that did show the AJ Styles versus Samoa Joe matchup, and AJ did have the belt over his shoulder. Now, does that mean it's going to be a championship match and AJ is going to be the champion? I don't think so. What I think this really shows, though, is that they have faith in the name value of Roman Reigns, Kevin Owens, AJ Styles, and Samoa Joe. I think that's what that says, is these are four guys we feel like whose names can help sell tickets for the event. And so I think that, you know, you can look into that and say, you know, the WWE feels good about AJ Styles. They feel good about Roman Reigns. It's tough to be able to say who's going to be champion and who's not. I know they had a Raw event here in Little Rock in June, you know, Little Rock where I live. And, you know, they were advertising the six-man tag a couple months in advance that never actually happened. You know, it's just trying to throw those names out there to get people to buy tickets. So I think it's too early to say that any of this is legitimate and it's going to happen. But it does tell us that they feel comfortable and confident in these guys, and that these guys are part of their future plans. So I think that says good things for Samoa Joe and Kevin Owens. and their futures over the next few months.
If you were the booker for SummerSlam, what would you like to see go down in August? What direction would you like to see them take? And we're going to talk about Brock Lesnar a little bit more here in a second.
Sure.
But what would you like to see go down the next couple months, Extreme Rules going into SummerSlam and beyond?
It's a great question, and I'm not one of those people who are, lays out super fantasy booking scenarios necessarily. But for me, for Brock Lesnar, we have to do something different with Brock Lesnar. We can't throw out Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns yet again and expect different results. What makes Brock Lesnar unique is to be in unique circumstances. He had the match with Goldberg, which was something different. To be able to see him against AJ Styles, and for lack of a better term, the clash in styles between those two, that was interesting. So, I'm not sitting here saying we need to have a Daniel Bryan versus Brock Lesnar match, but to get fans interested, they need to see something they haven't seen before, and that's the type of thing that I think would interest fans. Brock Lesnar versus Seth Rollins, and I know they've been involved in some matches before, but right now Seth Rollins is probably at the top of his game, and just seeing his style versus a guy like Lesnar would be something different. So I think you have to look for something different. It'll be interesting to see, does The Undertaker play a role in SummerSlam, because we're going to see him at a Madison Square Garden event here coming up. He's being advertised in the future for the event in Australia. So does he play a role in things? Is this the time that they do Miz versus Daniel Bryan? So there's a lot of questions they have to answer moving forward as we get closer to SummerSlam, the biggest of which being, what do you do with Brock Lesnar that makes him interesting and compelling to the audience? Because you don't want what happened at WrestleMania again. And I sat in the crowd of people who seemed disinterested and were already thinking about how they're going to get back to their hotel once the show's over.
Yeah, well, I was at that WrestleMania as well, and yeah, it was definitely it was interesting to say the least. To have people very, and that's what I've told you before. It wasn't necessarily that people were against Roman or for Brock. It was just they just didn't care, and I think that's probably worse.
They weren't for that match, right?
Yeah.
They weren't for that match. So
yeah, this is just me personally, but if I don't know how they get there, but to me, if you don't go with Seth Rollins as your next challenger, I don't understand why they had him drop the Intercontinental title, and he was on such a run, then he drops it out of nowhere to Dolph, and I know they're having a rematch at Extreme Rules. Maybe he gets it back, but again, I'm not in the booker's chair, but I would think that if you're judging just on hot streaks and guys that I think the crowd is actually getting behind, to me, he would be your number one guy, and if that's not the direction, I don't understand the decision to have him drop the IC title when he was on such a hot streak with that. But that's just
right. And the whole thing with Braun Strowman carrying around a briefcase is just strange to me, because I think of that, the guy with the briefcase should be somebody who, I don't know, could be a little sleazy, could come out of nowhere, could surprise people. I mean, this giant behemoth of a man walking around with this little, thing that looks like a purse in his hands, like he's going to come out and surprise anybody. I mean, I don't know. It just a monster like that doesn't need a Money in the Bank briefcase. And to me, if he wants to challenge Brock Lesnar, he just comes out and says, I want to fight. And maybe they'll do it that way. But it'll just be really interesting to see the approach they take with that. I'd be surprised if he holds on to it for that long.
Have you heard that they made him a bigger briefcase so it doesn't look so small when he's holding it? I heard that or read that somewhere.
I haven't, but you may be completely right. So, for him to hold the briefcase that's the same size as Carmella's probably wouldn't make a whole lot of sense. So,
well, you mentioned Brock Lesnar, and that kind of leads me into my next question regarding him. He's coming up on – he's probably going to end up holding the Universal title for – close to 400 days, maybe even 400 plus. I'm not sure what the count is right now and what it may be up to even at SummerSlam, assuming that he works SummerSlam. How do you think this current run of his, and I'm talking about the Universal title reign, will be remembered? Do you think that overall it has helped or has it hurt the product and Raw? And I know now they're trying to make kind of a storyline out of his contract disputes and things. But there were some very real things going on, if reports are to be believed, behind the scenes around WrestleMania time, you know, around extension time, where they didn't know how many events he would work, if he was going to come back, you know, kind of what they were. It sounded like at times they were kind of flying by the seat of their pants of what they were going to do with Brock Lesnar. And for whatever reason, it seems that he, in either the company's eyes or Vince's eyes, is a very important cog in their machine for whatever reason. So how do you think his current run will be remembered? Do you think that overall he has helped the product, he has helped Raw, or do you think that all these contract shenanigans and him only defending the belt, you know, and being at, you know, 4 or 5 pay-per-views a year has ultimately hurt and devalued the title itself and also the product? So, what's your opinion on his current run and how he's perceived?
You know, and Brock Lesnar gets a lot of heat from fans. Like, Brock is just doing the job that he signed up for, right? WWE agreed to let him work this many dates. So at the end of the day, we have to be upset with WWE and not necessarily with Brock. I think Brock Lesnar's title reign will be remembered for however it's going to end. I had to earlier today look up, like, okay, well, what are some of the matches he's had over the last few months? What has he done since he won the title? Because I couldn't remember, because it's not that impactful. It's not that memorable. To me, you know, to have a guy like this who's been champion for so long and been so strong throughout that reign, it's got to be setting up for somebody, you know, to come in, to be able to slay the dragon, if you will, and you know, for that to mark the beginning of their run, whoever that person is. So that's really the question, is who's going to be that guy to carry the torch to be able to defeat Brock Lesnar after all these months as champion. And so I think that his title reign ultimately will be remembered for whoever beats him and carries the torch from here on out.
Is there such a thing as a transitional champion who holds the title for 400 and some plus days?
Right, yeah. Well, the whole thing, I mean, you know, the belt's not even on TV, really. So, you know, do you diminish the belt? You know, maybe, but it's the type of thing. It has so much history behind it. It has, you know, name value. And I'm not talking about the Universal title, right? I'm talking about a belt that is considered the championship belt in WWE more so. I mean, whoever wins it, they get it back on TV. They can get all that energy back and prestige behind it in no time. But yeah, I guess that would be the big question, right? Is why has he held it for this long? What's the payoff? What does it mean? I mean, 2 years ago, I get it. Brock Lesnar, you know, this monster who had come from UFC, he had name value. He would help you get mainstream publicity. Well, now that novelty has worn off a little bit. So you have to think there's something. You know, we hear these rumors of him potentially going back to UFC and fighting again. You know, is he going to do that? And do they want him to compete in the UFC as WWE champion? You know, I don't know. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But I think that's the big question, is why has he held it for this long? Unless it's ultimately to put somebody over and this guy is the new face of the company and, you know, leads WWE for the next, you know, 5 or 10 years. I just don't know.
I made this point in an article that I wrote that I felt like the Universal title at this point is what makes Brock Lesnar interesting. As you said, the novelty of him being this UFC guy that comes and mows people over, you know, throwing 10 German suplexes in a match. That was cool and all when he first came here, but after 2-3 years of it, that's kind of worn off. And as you said, the main thing that interests me about Brock when he's on a pay-per-view or when he's defending the title is to see if he's going to lose it. So once he loses it, do you think that he really means much to the WWE? As you know, what is his box office draw if he's not the champion? If you're not watching him to see, okay, is this the night that he's going to lose the title? Who's the guy that's going to dethrone him? Once he does drop it, what draw does he offer the WWE?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, he's still a monster, right? He's still an athletic freak. There's still things he can do that no one else can. So it's just all about, is he motivated to compete at that level? You know, is that what he wants to do? Is he going to be around to help build up matches the right way? I would argue, and I love Paul Heyman. I love Paul Heyman promos, but I'm tired of hearing Paul Heyman promos. I'm tired of Paul Heyman, you know, barking on the microphone while Brock, you know, shuttles up and down and smiles next to him. We've seen it before. So there's things they can do to make Brock interesting and you know, help enhance other talent in the process. It's just all about whether they want to do that, whether Brock wants to do that, and their plans moving forward. But I wouldn't just write off Brock Lesnar as, you know, he has to be this or he has to be that. I think there's options there. They just have to be smart about it.
All right, we'll move on. Now we're gonna wrap up with a happy topic. So we'll kind of move on right now. I hope this doesn't get too heavy, but a topic I wanted to address, and I brought this up in an article that I wrote last week for thechairshot.com. That's a website that I contribute to that I plug here on the podcast. But it was about the WWE personal conduct policy. And it's kind of interesting because this comes at a time also we're seeing this in the NFL. You know, Jameis Winston's gotten into some trouble here lately and been suspended by the NFL. We see it in, you know, in NBA, MLB, you know, all major sports, so WWE included. And I made the point that, you know, just I guess maybe 2-3 weeks ago, when the Hardy Boys WWE 24 episode, you know, came out on the network. And I saw on social media everybody raving about the episode, about how good it was. It pulled no punches. You know, it talked about all of their demons. It talked about all of their arrest records and their rap sheets and, you know, everything that they'd gone through up to their return to the WWE. And then even since they've been back, you know, we've known Jeff Hardy has had issues with a DUI and, you know, as well as an injury. But they've been propped up as conquering heroes, a comeback story, that they had all these issues they dealt with, drug abuse, domestic violence, mm-hmm. et cetera, et cetera. They've come back now. Everybody's welcoming them with open arms. And I contrasted that with someone like Hulk Hogan, who, even though we've heard that his return may be imminent, ever since he had his issue, the WWE's acted like he never existed. They took him off his website. They took him out of the Hall of Fame. And I'm not here to compare what the Hardys did to what Hogan did or anything like that, but it was just to me, the selective enforcement of this guy does one thing, we're blackballing him out of the company and acting like he never existed. We don't want to have anything to do with him. These guys do this over here. You know, it's racial slurs versus drug abuse and domestic violence, but that's okay. We're going to bring them back, and not only we're going to bring them back, but we're going to do a documentary on them, and we're going to hail them as a comeback story. And then, oh yeah, 3 months into their return, Jeff Hardy's going to get a DUI for driving intoxicated. You know, potentially could have killed somebody. Thankfully, you know, all he did damage was to his car. But so to me, seems like selective enforcement, and I don't know what, you know, what causes that, and I know that happens in all areas of sports, but just wanted to kind of get your opinion just on that aspect of, you know, the personal conduct. Is there a personal conduct policy, you know, written in the WWE? Is it just simply selective punishment? You know, we've seen some of the same things with Enzo Amore, with, you know, mm-hmm. backstage problems we've heard reported with Big Cass, and he gets released. So just kind of all this stuff, it seems to be floating around the WWE here lately with some of their guys. So I just wanted to kind of get your opinion, a guy, you know, kind of on, you know, the inside and with a lot of experience. What is your opinion of the way that WWE goes about punishing these guys and deciding what actions to take, you know, with selective guys, or the way that they, when they bring guys back, the way that they're presented, like a Hardy Boys who they do a documentary on and put it on the network and act like they should be applauded for overcoming their, you know, quote unquote demons.
Right. Yeah. The interesting thing about, you know, personnel conduct policies and stuff like that, like we have them, you know, so in a TV news environment, like I'm in, you know, all our talent has to sign contracts that have those in them. I have a contract that has that in it. You know, it's one of those things that really it can be enforced however you want it to be enforced, right? If you have a high-performing employee, if you have a Randy Orton or a John Cena or somebody like that that goes out and causes some sort of a problem, and they're a high performer that I want to keep around, you know, you treat that, you know, maybe with kid gloves. Whereas if you have a big cast who maybe hasn't been meeting expectations, right, and then has some sort of an issue, that's your opportunity there, you know, to be able to future endeavor that person. And I think that's what you're kind of seeing. You know, the whole Hogan thing was horrible timing. It was a bad situation. And, you know, the deal with Hulk Hogan is anything he does is mainstream press coverage, right? Jeff Hardy, what he does, you know, maybe it gets a little bit of attention in the press, and nobody wants that. But, you know, somebody like Hulk Hogan, he makes a wrong move, and everybody in the world's going to hear about it. And that's something that WWE just couldn't handle at that moment. I think the domestic violence issue, you know, and the prominence that that plays right now in society, you know, they have to kind of have a zero tolerance policy with that, which they dealt with Rich Swann, which they dealt with Enzo Amore. But, you know, with the Hardys, I think that's one of those things where, you know, they want to feel good about the Hardys. They want the Hardys to, you know, to be in a good place and in their careers the right way. And so, you know, you're kind of seeing that in the story that they paint with them and the way that things worked out in the documentary. Why are they choosing to do that? You know, I don't know. Maybe it's personal feelings. Maybe they think it's good business. But yeah, it was interesting, you know, with Enzo and Cass, you know, they looked at the policy, they looked at the guys, and they said, let's sever ties, and that's the end of it. So a policy like that can really be implemented when they choose to, depending on the person. You know, it's not uniform always across the board. It may not always be considered fair, and I think we've seen examples of that here.
Yeah, it's always interesting, you know, even I said we've seen in the NFL where they can even have a policy written on paper, and I don't know if the WWE actually has such a policy, you know, written down where there's tiers of punishment, but the NFL we know does, and we still see guys that commit a, you know, like I mentioned the Jameis Winston deal, you know, committed a 6-game offense, and it's reduced to 3, you know, so we see variances all over the place. I just found it interesting just the way, you know, not only how they enforce it and who they bring back, but like I said, I thought the most interesting thing was how they were brought back. You know, like with the Hardy Boys, you could bring them back and say, okay, it's water under the bridge, and a lot of their transgressions were did take place when they weren't employed by the WWE. So I could see that also, like, hey, they weren't employed by us when this happened, we're bringing them back. But I would think some of those you would just want to kind of forget about and just gloss over and move on, as opposed to put it out there on a documentary and I said almost, you know, celebrate and bring it to the forefront again. You know, these things happened 2, 3, 4 years ago, almost like we'd forgotten about it. Let's just bring them back with a clean slate. But the WWE chose to bring the rap sheet all back up, you know, for the sake of a WWE network special, you know, so mm-hmm. that was interesting to me about why, you know, why not just say we're moving on, let's forget about the past, as opposed to bringing it up and making a, you know, making a documentary about it.
Yeah, and I think one thing to note there, I remember Matt Hardy tweeting during or right after it aired and saying that if they ever wanted their story to be told, they wanted WWE to tell it. And I think, you know, one thing you can point to with Matt Hardy's history is that, you know, he's a smart business guy from a standpoint of content creation, from, you know, the character he developed and Impact and Ultimate Deletion and all that sort of stuff, which you can argue whether or not it's good television. But boy, he, you know, he knows how to put out stuff, put out content that people are interested in consuming. And I think ultimately he knew we have an interesting story. You know, I think he probably pitched it to WWE as what if we were to do this? And, you know, WWE and the WWE Network, I mean, they're looking for unique programming, you know, to drive people over there and get subscriptions up. And at the end of the day, it was pretty unique programming. You know, one of their more talked about 24 episodes or any episode they've produced over the last few years. So from a business standpoint, I can see where it might make sense. But boy, you got to hope that the Hardys are done with their transgressions and it's all a clean slate from here, or else, you know, we'll be looking back at that and saying that documentary didn't age too well.
So let's move on. Let's move on to something a little bit more lighthearted. Let's end on a high note here. Now you're working on a series of articles titled "Wrestling Is Good" that focuses on the positives that wrestling brings either out into the communities. You've done articles on, for instance, you know, Sasha Banks reaching out to local police in her right. city, in her hometown. Mustafa Ali, his story with basically preventing a fan's suicide. We've mm-hmm. also seen a story of him where he donated one of his masks to a sick child, a sick fan. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of articles about the things that we usually don't hear about in the news cycle. The negative is easy to report on. We usually don't hear about the positives and the good things that the WWE or just wrestling in general is bringing to the general public. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, this Wrestling is Good series and what your motivation, what your inspiration was for the series and kind of what you're hoping to accomplish.
Yeah. So, you know, it started with, you know, a couple things I had seen and I just tweeted it out and I think I just, you know, three words, wrestling is good. You know, and just thought, man, this is a neat example of, you know, wrestling, uplifting people, empowering people, connecting people, you know, those sorts of things. And then Ryan Satin, who runs Pro Wrestling Sheet, said, do you think you could take some of these tweets that, you know, had kind of been gaining some steam and getting interactions, do you think you could take these tweets and turn it into an article? And I thought, you know, that's something different that's not, that, you know, kind of, as you mentioned, the content that's not out there in the news cycle. So I kind of took on that challenge and said, you know, let's try it and let's see how people react. And so far, the reaction has been great. You know, I think as wrestling fans, we want to celebrate the good. We spend a lot of time talking about the things we don't like, whether it's Brock Lesnar's title run or, you know, the way certain things are booked. But there's a lot of things that make us proud to be fans. And sometimes it's, you know, as you mentioned, Mustafa Ali helping out a fan or, you know, Sasha Banks connecting with a cop on social media and giving him tickets to be able to bring members of the community he serves. You know, those are the neat stories that as wrestling fans, we can all kind of relate to and feel good about. And, you know, for me, you know, being a guy who's a, you know, manager in the TV business, it's, you know, I guess I'm in a role where people wouldn't normally think I'm a wrestling fan, you know, and so I tell them, oh, yeah, I like wrestling, and, you know, oh, how could you like that? Wrestling's this or wrestling's that. You know, wrestling's not good. It's you know, they just have these preconceived notions that wrestling's kind of, you know, low society, if you will. And so to me, to be able to put out stories that say it's not, you know, it's special, it connects people, it empowers people. You know, maybe in some ways it saves lives. To me, that's something I enjoy, you know, being able to put those stories out there and, you know, just make us everybody really feel good about being wrestling fans. So that's really what it is kind of at the heart of it.
And now that's a series our, can fans find that on ProWrestlingSheet.com? Is that strictly through your social media? Where can we find those articles?
Yeah, you can. If you go to Pro Wrestling Sheet and then over in the search bar, put in Wrestling is Good, you'll be able to find a few of those. You know, and I think right now we have, you know, about two coming out each week. And, you know, what we really need, though, are those examples from people, those experiences from people. So if anybody listening to this has one, you know, find me on Twitter, AK on Wrestling, you know, shoot me a note and let's connect and try to put it on paper and kind of bring it to life. Because, you know, it's really about those personal experiences that people have and the way wrestling's impacted their life.
Yeah, definitely always good to hear the positive that's coming out of the, you know, the sport that we love. And as wrestling fans, it's always nice to have something to point to that's positive and uplifting. And as you said, sometimes we can get kind of wrapped up in the negative and what we don't like and what we're not happy to be seeing on our TV screen. But especially nowadays, it reaches, you know, far, far more than just what we see on, you know, Raw and SmackDown. I mean, the company as a whole is really reaching out and doing a lot in their communities and, you know, with Special Olympics and things. So at the heart of it, you know, to see good people doing good things for others is always a good thing.
Yep.
All right. Well, Austin Kellerman, appreciate you joining us. You can find him again as a contributor at ProWrestlingSheet.com. You can find him on Twitter at AK on Wrestling. Give him a follow over there. Austin, anything else you want to plug or give us a heads up about before we let you go here?
No. I appreciate it. Appreciate the time. Appreciate everybody listening. And you know, let's connect and talk about why wrestling is good.
Absolutely. Austin, I appreciate you taking the time for us and being on Kentucky Wrestle Report.
You bet.
That'll do it for this week's episode of the Kentucky Wrestle Report. I again want to thank Austin Kellerman for joining me this week. I want to thank you guys for tuning in. Make sure that you're following me on Twitter at KYRussellReport and at Corey Guns. Check out my article contributions at thechairshot.com. Get out and support Kentucky Independent Wrestling. Send me your show reports. Send me your pictures. Let me know what's going on around your area. And I hope that you guys continue to tune into us every Friday here on the Kentucky Wrestle Report.
Recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.